session here. Commissioner McElroy, would you like to come forward? Thank you for coming before the committee.
It's our pleasure, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
My understanding, I'm not the chair, I'm the vice chair, but my understanding is that you had done a recent interview and there were some comments made. We just wanted to engage in a conversation with you about some of those.
Right.
I guess the first thing is that the impression was that you felt things were improving, and what evidence do you have of that, and kind of what direction do you think things are going in?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And the interview in question is one that I did with Kathy Werger on Minnesota Public Radio last Friday morning. And it's available on their website so you can hear it. It was in response to a press release that we had done on Thursday announcing the March unemployment compensation numbers. And the producer for the program called and asked, is there any good news embedded behind the bad news? And in what employment areas are there job opportunities? And so that was the background of the interview. I started by repeating that the unemployment rate went up to 8.2% and talking a little about that. And then reminded people that behind every one of these numbers, there are people. These are families and households. And then Kathy asked me, what about good news? I want to underscore that one of the problems with the numbers we released is that they are statewide average numbers. And this, contrary to the Lake Wobegon phrase, Minnesota has great variations among the average. And I'm going to provide in your handout are some regional and county unemployment rates. But the statewide averages are what we're often asked about from the media. But they mask differences that are fairly substantial in this recession. Now, with that said, we are seeing, and it's hard to say that it's good news. We are seeing some indications I'll share with you, and we can decide in discussion if you think they're good news. The number of initial claims for unemployment is down from about 11,000 in the mid-11,000s in January per week to about 8,500 today. And that is high by historic average, but that is a fairly significant, that's more than a seasonal downturn between mid-January and mid-April. The number of total claims has stayed about flat, and there's no number of total people collecting, including the extension. That's In light of the fact that the unemployment rate is going up and that the national environmentics are not very good, we're somewhat encouraged by that. On the background economic news, in the last week, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has announced that, or it may be the Bureau of Economic Analysis, one of the federal statistical agencies, has announced that orders for manufactured goods were up measurably in March, 3.2%. Housing sales, at least in the 11 county metropolitan area, were up 30 some percent this March over last March and 2% March over February. It's as if things go from pitch black to very dark because they're still at low numbers, but it is causing some hope in the housing area, which has been a major indicator in this recession. The Conference Board index of consumer confidence went up for the first time last month, very marginally. And again, it went up from, I don't remember the numbers, but like 30 to 32. And it's comfortable economic times when it's in the 50s or 60s. And so these are, I've been asked if I see a light at the end of the economic tunnel, and my response is no. There are some signs that the light bulbs may be being unwrapped.
And could I just ask you the question about housing? Is it possible those increases that you're seeing have to do with the resolution of some of the foreclosures and people being able to the drop in prices and things like that of housing?
Absolutely, they are. the press release has come from the MLS service and has the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and they acknowledge that many of them are lender-intermediated sales. The good part of it is, however, that it reduces the inventory of such houses and is a necessary step to construction starting. We've had what I would describe as disastrous decline in residential construction since 2006. And the best numbers we get are from the Census Bureau, and housing starts have gone down from 40,000 approximately statewide to an estimate of 8,000 statewide last year. And that includes houses replaced because of disasters like the floods in southeastern Minnesota and the tornado in Hugo or the flood in Browns Valley. It's not sort of market starts. It includes disaster reconstruction. So it's a rather discouraging number. The two other things in the kind of moderate good news, we gave you a handout that I want to reference, and it has this simple red and blue chart on the front of it. Those are unemployment rates, and through October, a number of economists are describing this as a two-phase recession, where we had a housing-led recession through September, and then following the absolute freeze-up of credit markets the first week in October, it went into phase two that's been much broader and has touched virtually every segment of the economy. One of the things that happened on October 6th, when Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy, Bear Stearns was sold, Morgan Stanley was near collapse, was that the spread between Treasury bill rates and interbank rates ballooned to the highest difference in history. Economists track it as something called the TED spread, and it's an acronym for Treasury to Eurodollar spread. And for two decades, it had been in the range of 0.2 to 0.3 of a percentage point, 20 to 30 basis points. And we should have spotted that the markets were starting to come unglued. It went to about 100 basis points starting in late 07. But on October 7th, it went to 465 basis points. And international credit markets were essentially frozen solid. That's why people couldn't get car loans or, you know, virtually any credit for several months. Those TED spread rates have begun to correct to nearer to normal rates. The Treasury to Eurodollar rate, Mr. Chairman, came back under 100 points last week for the first time. It was about 97. And so people who watch bank credit and the availability of business capital see that as good news. We're also seeing the beginning of some activity in home mortgage, principally from refinancing. But it has the advantage of putting more dollars into consumer discretionary either saving or spending. We have heard from the Minnesota Association of Mortgage Bankers that it's now possible for someone with a value-to-loan ratio not above 80% and a credit score of about 700 to get a 30-year fixed mortgage in the high 4%, 4.875, 4.85, something like that. The best rates in a long time, and that's putting dollars in not in every pocket, but in some pockets. And the mortgage brokers and originators are reporting for the first time in 3 years that they're fairly busy. And that, for the macro economy, is good because it can drive consumer spending. Savings, as you may have noted or may have seen in the Star Tribune, were at near zero as a kind of national savings rate in early 2008. And we always tend to save more during a recession, which is to some extent counterproductive because it reduces consumer spending. And savings rates went up to 3.8% in the fourth quarter, 2008. And I've heard Tom Simpson say he expects them to be at 6% in the first quarter of 2009. As people gain more confidence, we may see some of that translate to consumer spending that makes a difference in the economy, that is good news in the economy. But if I can go on in the handout if that's helpful.
Let me just ask if anyone has any questions at this point. Any questions? Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, the reason I think you were asked here was the interview, and because I heard it and I was having my second cup of coffee by that moment, so I suspect you were probably on your third or fourth because they had actually called you. But when you said the 400,000 jobs had been found in the last quarter, it just about, messed up my whole newspaper because spilling my coffee. And as soon as I recovered enough, I actually called and left a message for my committee assistant to, you know, find out what the heck was going on, because, you know, I'm not, the employment opportunity for me once it, after May 18th does not look good at this particular point. I'm hoping legislative salaries stretch. But, you know, and I've come to find out that the number that you left out was that there are 423,000 jobs lost in that quarter. So we, there was a loss of about 23,000 jobs difference, that churn, as you call it. And that wasn't brought up. So it really left kind of the impression, oh, well, we're actually turning this thing around here. But, you know, so my question, I've got a question, number of them that go along with this. It was difficult for my assistant to find that number on your website. She actually had to call over to the department. I'm just kind of wondering why that number, you know, how many jobs do we lose in a quarter, isn't posted on your website somewhere. Because it certainly didn't seem to be when she was looking for it, and she's reasonably technically savvy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, it is on the it's on the press release that we issue the third Thursday of each month when we announce the unemployment rates. We also announce jobs lost, and in this case, it happens to match. We lost 23,000 jobs. The 400,000 number is the number of Social Security numbers that appeared for different employers or new employers during the fourth quarter that hadn't been there previously, and so. The reason that we think it's an interesting number is we're concerned that those who may be out of work may get the impression it's not worth looking. And this is a big, big, fairly active economy. There are 2.7 million wage jobs in the economy. There are another approximately 250,000 self-employed jobs in the economy. And so I think it's important that people realize that even in tough times in this big economy, there are some people getting jobs. I think I usually go on to say not enough people getting jobs. But at the top of that interview, we had said the unemployment rate went from 8 to 8.2, and I think we said we lost 23,000 jobs. They are related. We did in the press release. She, Kathy may not have asked me about
it. Right. Mr. Chair. Good
morning. Yes.
Because I actually, when I got here, they had to call somebody to show me how to find out how to listen to my computer, and then the IT people came up and showed me. And I listened to it a couple times. So you never alluded to how many jobs we had lost. But you did allude to the fact that, you know, there were some areas where there was some significant job growth in health and IT and service industry. The other part to that is, and it's all well and good to encourage people to go out and look for jobs, the 40% of those jobs that are out there, according to the Jobs Now Coalition, are part-time. And almost, I think, what is the number? Only one of those jobs offer a wage more than $12 an hour. So the median takes the cost of living in the metro area and most of the state is substantially higher than that. I mean, painting a rosy picture is one thing, but I think you might have gone a little bit overboard, or you need to really kind of rein that back in, because people, you don't want them to be totally discouraged, but they also need to have reasonable expectations. They go out looking for a job and they find out that they can only make $9 an hour, can't afford to feed their family on that.
Mr. McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney. The interview format sometimes limits how much I am able to respond in response to a question. It's good advice, and we'll try to be as balanced in that as we can. I would have to look at the jobs in healthcare and information technology that I mentioned. I suspect they have median wages that are higher than that, but we can find out. I don't have all that information on the top of my head. I don't have much on the top of my head, but in terms of part-time, that is a concern. We have seen a higher percentage of jobs become part-time during this downturn. Some employers cutting back hours, some using programs like Shared Work, and some not. Mr. Chairman, if we could go to this map. This is a critical question. This is a big state, and the picture looks different in northern and north-central Minnesota in large measure because of their industry mix. Now, I want to make clear that these are not seasonally adjusted numbers. And so areas that have large components of seasonal industry have both a recession-induced problem and a seasonal challenge. And they have, in some cases, a seasonal challenge. In Representative Rocavina's district, forestry would actually work in the winter in many cases. They'd be out in the woods, and there's no market in most cases. So they're doubly challenged. These also include county averages. And, for example, in St. Louis County, it shows a county average of 10.2% in March, 10.1%. It would be higher than that in the northern part of the county and lower in the southern part of the county. But the best data we get is countywide data. These are on our website. They're on a page under labor market information. In fact, they're the front page each month. They have a nerdy acronym that the Department of Labor gives them called LAUS, L-A-U-S, which stands for Local Area Unemployment Statistics. But there is a map, and you can get both the regions like this or the individual counties like you see on the next page each month. They are about a week after we make the statewide announcement, the county and regional data is available. We're deeply concerned about some counties, and the reasonable question would be, what does DD do, or what does the government do, or what does the community do to try and address these? And perhaps I should pause and take questions about those maps and then go on and talk about what we're doing to try and make a difference.
I've got one other question, and then I'll shut up because I've kind of monopolized this. Back in the 2000 recession, at the start, it was early 2000. There were two people looking for a job for every one job out there. Maybe a little lower. It's like 1.7 persons for every job. And today, end of 2008, after 8 years of this, it's like 8 to 1. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Really bad. And the dismal record for the state after 25 years of some serious growth and serious, the Minnesota Miracle, Time Magazine, the whole deal. Can you tell me and tell the rest of the committee what the department is doing to turn that situation around? I mean, what is the state of Minnesota doing to help our state get out of this, get ready to get out of this, to grow when we get out? Because I've been trying to find that out all session, and it's just not don't have the answer I'm looking for just yet.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, let me take that in two parts. First, the survey that you respond to is something called the Job Vacancy Survey that we do twice a year. And I'm looking up to Bob Isaacson, who may be able to give us a little more detail. We may not have it with us. I don't remember the details or whether the methodology has changed. But there is no question. There are more people looking for each job than there were 8 years ago. And I don't think it you can attribute all of this challenge to state policy or to our agency's policy. This recession is the deepest we've had since 1982. It is caused by things like the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act in 1998 and 99. And we've been through housing challenge, the impact on building materials and building supply, and a wide variety of housing issues. That cascaded into a meltdown of international markets and banking systems that froze up other credit markets that led to a broader recession. What are we doing to help? And the answer is we do things principally with partners like local workforce service areas, nonprofits, job providers, educational institutions, local economic developers in communities, cities and counties, and a variety of other partners. Our efforts probably fall into three areas: things that we do to help individuals through workforce programs, and that we do that with 16 workforce service partners, and they are great partners, and we appreciate their efforts. We do that with what happens in the 47 workforce centers. Well, I have a chance to plug it if any of you ever need, or any of your constituents need to know how to get to it. 1-888-GET-JOBS gets you to your local workforce center, any place in the continental United States that you call it, and it's an easy way to find it. in the last month, we have 60 additional state employees in the workforce centers funded with federal stimulus dollars. We have about, I'm not sure exactly how many more computers we have, Rick, do you know? Several hundred additional computers in resource rooms, so that because job search today is principally online, and so that's having more computers and more people to help people use the computers is critical. We have more workshops and seminars being given than ever before. Workshops like Work Ready U in the Minneapolis and Hennepin County workforce centers, or Creative Job Search and Creative Job Search for people over 40 in a variety of our other workforce centers. Resume building skills. We have job clubs. So we, the job seeker services done principally with partners and with our own team is one element. Secondly, we have new resources in the Dislocated Workers Program, and so we're able to provide some dislocated worker services to more people, at least while those principally federal dollars work for us. Thirdly, we have some online resources that are helpful, like MinnesotaWorks.net, and it's one of the positive indicators that I talk about is the fact the number of job postings are up a little, not dramatically. But in recent days, we've had about 15,000 jobs listed, up from about 8,000 a month or 5 weeks ago. We also operate iSeek, iSeek.org, a career counseling kind of job advice process, and also Career One Stop that helps people know where there may be careers and what they pay and which what portion of them are likely, at least on a statistical basis, to be full-time. So those are, and then, with many of our partners, we have some specialized programs. Rick Calgeri is in the audience and can help me if you have specific interests, but we're doing more and more to assist those with a criminal background who are getting out of jail and prison and need help finding jobs. In a number of our workforce centers, that's an emphasis. In some of our workforce centers, we may have language-based programs for people that are with limited English. We have been doing a fair amount with job training programs through the Job Skills Partnership, and that is happening both in conjunction with MNSCU partners and in some cases with our workforce centers. So those are our principal workforce components. We also assist communities, and we provided a, I think, four-page handout based on grant programs and grants that we've issued for fiscal year 09 to date. And these are in programs that the legislature has appropriated money for, principally through the bonding bill, but that we can assist communities. And some of you have business public development infrastructure or redevelopment fund or contaminated sites projects in your community. We think that we know that these leverage thousands of jobs. We have reports available that connect them to jobs if that's of interest to you. We continue to work with the job opportunity building zones for communities and continue to get a few of those done each year. They have become less capacious as we get closer to the expiration date. But, for example, that's one of the tools that we are discussing in the city of St. Charles for the rebuilding of North Star Foods. And we have done, I'd have to ask staff, a dozen or so of those in fiscal year 2009. We also help connect communities to federal programs like rural development and federal economic development at the Department of Commerce. We also work extensively with industry-specific projects. We'll be going to the American Wind Energy show in Chicago to attract wind power manufacturers and have had some success in that area. We've also been very active with a group called IREDI, the Renewable Energy People, and in Green Jobs, and have had some success there. And we're a partner with the Minnesota Biobusiness Alliance. I'm a member of their board in the 2020 Roadmap for Bioenergy. We spend a great deal of time on industry clusters and sectors where Minnesota has done well. And one of the challenges is that we have some fairly major clusters that were badly impacted in this recession, like construction materials, for example, and mortgage finance and some others. Then on the business side, we provide assistance to individual businesses, often through community partners. And we have had some success, but extreme difficulty in getting deals financed is causing some challenge. Deals that we have announced in the last 8 or 9 months include Hydro Controls in Red Wing that is under construction. And that's an Italian component manufacturer for the farm and construction equipment business. Moventis in Faribault. We've had a lot of involvement in that, and just more partners than I can ever imagine. We had Great River Energy with an Energy Star loan, and the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, and the City of Faribault, and the county, the local technical college, a lot of partners to win that competition over a number of other states. And that is announced and permitted, but pending the completion of their financing in Faribault. We have, I think, about 300 projects like that in some stage of discussion. We have a staff of about approximately 25 people that partners with communities and companies to make things like that happen. More of them are expansions of existing companies that tend to get a little more publicity when they're new. But for example, we are already in discussions with Northstar about their rebuilding being bigger than their original plant. We get good opportunities to help companies. The challenge is it's harder for them to do, and Representative Rukavina knows that some exciting projects in his district are on hold because of financing and other and markets. So this is, as the economy gets more difficult, the business development side of our work gets more difficult, but we work really hard at it, Representative Mahoney. Yeah. And I think what you have asked for is, can I give you a book that's the plan? Where's the document? And the challenge is that we work, there are a number of documents, like the roadmap for the Biobusiness Alliance or the Wind Energy Network. We have not tried in this complex state to create a single document. A number of states have followed that, and they're dealing on a more regional basis. But I will continue to work with you to try and get a plan that's that does what you want it to do, it communicates to you what we're doing, and yet doesn't distract the people out there doing the work with an unnecessary planning layer. But we are doing quite a bit. We are certainly anxious to work with any of you who have ideas of other things we can be doing.
Representative Norton, if you have a question.
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, I guess one of the things I just want to make a comment on is that one of the things we can't do is add more fees and taxes to our businesses in the state, the job providers. So that's the least we can do to help the situation. We've had programs like Job Z that gets demonized. People want to take away the ethanol subsidy now that created those jobs. So I think we need to be a little more positive state than where it seems we are headed. The question I have for the Commissioner McElroy, how many jobs did we lose when Delta merged with Northwest Airlines? Do you have an approximate number?
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Norton, the short answer is we estimated in the range of 2,000 to 3,000 kind of in the short term. Some of those are still happening. Some of those are based on an agreement that Delta reached with MAC in which they guaranteed to continue about 10,000 jobs. And we think if you counted all their entities prior to the merger, including the pilot training, the data center, Masaba, the leasing company, they were at 12,800 approximately. So we're starting to see some layoff notices now. There has been a little good news there, and I was hopeful for it. They're going to keep the Information Technology Center in Eagan. They found that we had tried to convince them that it's a really good place to do that. They're going to headquarter their three commuter carriers here, Atlantic Southeast and Comair, and the kind of construction of Compass Executive and Masaba, the Northwest Airlink Group. And so we're still fighting, and MAC has been helpful, City of Eagan has been helpful to keep as many of those jobs here as possible.
Yes. Mr. Chair, and my point is that some of the job losses are obviously out of our control. When there's a merger like that, the best you can do is fight for as many jobs as you can hold on to.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe it was Saturday's issue of the Star Tribune had a review of the 100 largest companies in Minnesota. And the casualty list included companies like Department 56 and Northwest, a number of others, that were beyond our control and do decrease the number of jobs. There are also some growing companies on that list.
One more question, if I can.
Go ahead.
Commissioner McElroy, do you happen to know the business tax being paid in Delta's home base as compared to Minnesota? Do you know the difference?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we can get the rate, but that's getting to be a very complicated question because of single sales apportionment. And an airline pays, if, for example, 10% of Delta's sales is in Minnesota and 10% of their corporate profit will be apportioned to Minnesota and they pay at the north at the Minnesota rate. If 30% is in Georgia, they pay in the Georgia rate. So I think that played a role in the decision, but it is corporate taxes are complicated by factors like that. Now, they're less complicated for a business, all of which is in Minnesota. And our rate, which is for C-Corps, is 9.8%, among the highest in the country. And it's a concern. It gets more complicated with a big global company like Delta.
But one more question, if I can. This will be a short one. This one map you have that shows percentages across the state unemployment rates. In good times, are those ratios approximately the same? So, is, for example, St. Louis County, is that always higher?
No.
Or is that a difficult question to answer?
Mr. Chairman, the short answer is I don't know for sure. Instinctively, I think this is disproportionate because of how some industries have suffered.
Okay.
Give me a year when mining and timber is doing well in St. Louis County.
That would change
pretty good regardless of recession.
Okay.
I have a question about southern Minnesota.
Yeah.
My district, looking at your county map, would be above the state average in unemployment. But I'm looking at the neighboring county to my county, LeSueur County, which is in my Senate district. And its unemployment rate seems almost twice as high as some of its neighboring counties. Do you have a plan for helping out LeSueur County, or what's going on there?
Well, the short answer is we have an economic development team led by Lisa Hughes, who's in Mankato, who works with the folks in LeSueur County. It is, as you know, a heavily agricultural county. There are some jobs at places like Seneca Foods and Davisco Cheese and Cambria that give them some non-ag jobs. And a fairly large percentage of the people who live in LeSueur drive out of the county for employment, we think. But I have not talked to the LeSueur County Administrator or their Economic Development Director recently, and so I can't tell you very honestly what their plans are, but we will find out and perhaps we can.
It seems like
I mentioned to Lisa Hughes why is LeSueur County higher than its neighbors, and she intends to work with the county. The Davis family certainly has plans for expansion. It's their five businesses. I don't know how much of them, I haven't talked to them lately as to how many of those jobs will be in LeSueur County. They recently expanded into Belle Plaine, and so some of their jobs may take place in the Belle Plaine facility.
Do you know what the downturn in jobs in LeSueur County is related to?
Do we have anybody from our, we're going to have to find out for you. I don't know.
Okay, all right. Any other questions? With Rokovina.
No, Mr. Chair, thank you. Commissioner, thanks for stopping by. You know, I just got out of tax committee and I haven't slept the last two nights because Representative Eastland knows I passed on voting for the tax bill and otherwise it would have went down. Representative Norris, you know, we have to fund government. That's unless we want anarchy, and sometimes I'd prefer that, but especially if I had the biggest gun. But anyway. You know, what I did is I left. I was ready to pull out because Representative Broad's and Cole's statements, and I had the jobs created by every governor since back to Rudy Purpose. And this whole concept that when you cut taxes, it trickles down and the wealthy create jobs is a bunch of BS because the figures are exactly the opposite. And we've had a dismal job creation under Governor Plante. And that is a fact. Commissioner, I don't know what your job creation plan is. This year in our budgets and your proposal, the only thing I remember is some somewhat weak proposal about green energy job Z thing, which we didn't pay for right away but had to pay for later. And Representative Norris, you know, job Z costs money out of the state fund too. So, you know, I don't even know where to begin on this. We have to do something. Times are terrible. I don't know what the current administration job plan is, Commissioner. I tried to do a MEAD-type program. I found a little money with a, basically that I got from the workforce development fee. And you know. We had a big discussion on that the other day. You weren't here. One of your, Miss Elsie, claimed that we were taking money and we were breaking the fund. And I'm looking at the sheet that Mr. Anthony, what's Anthony's last name?
Alonji
gave us. And, you know, you had some big carry forwards and then you spent them down. And it looks like, I don't even know what is in the current 09 budget. Can you tell me, or if anybody in the room can tell me, what actually is going to be left in the Workforce Development Fund by the end of June 30th? Does anybody know that figure?
We do, Mr. Chairman. Rick, can you help me with that? Rick Caligiuri, who runs the Workforce Investment Act programs and for whom Anthony reports, is going to come and help me. I think we probably have it.
Mr. Chair,
you have it with
me. Mr. Caligiuri, being a good Italian, you probably got these numbers right at the top of your head like I do. So if not, maybe you got them in your pocket like I have. But is there going to be anything left in the fund at the end of this biennium, 09?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Rick Caligiuri. I'm the Director of Job Seeker Programs at BEED. And, Mr. Chair, Representative Rifabina, my anticipation is that there will be very little money left in the Workforce Development Fund. We start out the year projecting what we will get in revenue and build a budget based on what our projections are of the revenue coming in. As the year progresses and we get actual receipts in, we revise those projections. This year we've been revising down continually based on the actual receipts, because payroll is down, the tax is generating less revenue. We believe at this point that we have about just a little over $2 million unobligated in the dislocated worker program, and that we would leave another million, which we anticipate spending, and that there would be approximately a million as a balance. But again, based on those receipts and those actual receipts coming in now through the end of the year, there may be nothing.
Mr. Chair, so I understand, is the $2 million on the bottom line, or maybe less on the bottom line, or is the $2 million include that transfer that I heard about back in, I believe Mr. Kurzmeier told me, when you transferred $6.5 million that Representative Gunther brought up and asked about at the about two meetings ago, the meeting before we passed the bill. Does that include that money?
It doesn't. No. That money was used basically to go out to local providers.
The $6.5 million that was pulled out for the mass layoff?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I correct myself. Yes, that does. The $2.3 million is what's left of that.
So there is actually no money on the bottom line, and $2.3 million left in the mass layoff.
There's $2.3 million, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, there's $2.3 million left to serve mass layoff. And we anticipate that there's $1 million left in balance. The JobSkills Partnership Board directed us to leave $1 million as a balance.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, we had had a policy in the past of having a $5 million carry-in and thought that it's essentially a rainy day fund, and the Justice Partnership Board said it's raining and let's invest that or get that out to programs. The recommendation was that the revenue estimates aren't accurate enough to take it down safely to zero, and that $1 million is to some extent an insurance against not overestimating revenue.
Well, members, you know, I recall last year in the balanced budgeting bill, the $8 million that we took out of the Workforce Development Fund and transferred to the general fund to pay for the deficit. And, you know, there's all these shifts of money. Anytime there's a little bit of money left, you know, I don't know, Representative McFarland, you probably don't like paying the Workforce Development fee, but you understand that when it's going to be used for something to train laid off workers, it might not be a bad thing, but then we take it and we move it somewhere else, just like we're doing with the Health Care Access Fund and everything else. But, Commissioner, you know, I'm getting to the the point of my whole conversation here, and that is that you saw what was happening and you had the authority to increase that fee to 0.12, and you didn't choose to do it, and now you've done it in the bill to 0.14 to try to pick up some money. And Representative Norner, I just think we've got to do something. Commissioner, if you would sit down with me, and while this bill is moving forward in conference committee, the workforce part of the bill, and work with us to come up with some job creation ideas, because the thing I saw was that the MEAD program was so successful when we had a huge downturn that you referenced back in the early 80s, and I saw no proposal like that from your department or the governor's office. So I went ahead and did it on my own at the urging of leadership and others. And, I want to work with you on that. But maybe the whole issue of the whole workforce service areas and the workforce centers and everything else has to be discussed because, I don't know how many other states, all states get displaced worker money from the federal government. And then I don't know how many other states have this little assessment and fee like Minnesota does.
We believe there are 12, Mr. Chairman.
So there are 12. I don't know what the rest do and if any of them are around us to keep their displaced workers and train them. But, we've got a lot of money going out, and I hope that Representative Mahoney over the interim looks at how this money's going out and what it's being used for, and because, I know there's the legislative appropriations that started under you, Commissioner, and kept going under Representative Gunther, and now, I'm even getting worse. So, but that money's got to be used wisely, and so I hope, Representative Mahoney, that you take a close look at that. And, Commissioner, these are terrible times, terrible, terrible times. If we were to look at St. Louis County and split that county, which is about 9 or 10 metropolitan area counties could fit into St. Louis County. I hate to even think of what our unemployment rate is up on the range right now. It's probably similar to yours, Mr. Chair. And, we've got to do something to train these people. I don't know for what even, what we're going to train them for, but, we've got to have some creative ideas. I'll say one thing about Rudy Perpich. He was a very creative guy who got ridiculed a lot of times, but there's a lot of good things going on in this state because of Rudy Perpich and because of some ideas he had about economic development from the Mall of America on down that, people jabbed him and teased him about. But I don't see any real creative initiatives coming out of either your department or the governor's office. So, perhaps there's still time to do that. And with a little bit of workforce development money that we increased a little bit, Commissioner, I'd be more than happy to work with you on some type of program that might help private industry keep going because the Main Street businesses are not doing good, or be used for some type of incentive to attract somebody here.
Did you wish to respond? Please?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Well, only to say, Representative Rufino, we'd be happy to meet with you. I appreciate your passion. When I think about Governor Perpich, I think about open enrollment as perhaps one of his biggest accomplishments, but he also had, as you mentioned, his support for the Mall of America and for other things. He was creative, and the governor's proposal was more than the green job zones. It also includes some fairly aggressive tax incentives for new business development and some aggressive areas in green jobs and energy. But we will make an appointment to come and visit with you and talk about what we may be able to do.
One last thing. Commissioner, do you want to address the fact that you had the option to, and seen what was happening, to increase that fee and you didn't do it? Do you want to address that?
Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to do that. If you look at this graph, we would have needed to make a decision to do it in the schedule of when we normally announce unemployment tax, workforce development fee, rates. Those are announced in early December to be effective in January. We announce them in December so employers can budget for what their obligations will be. We would have needed to make the decision in October. We got October unemployment numbers the 10th of November. October unemployment numbers were still around 6%. So we hadn't gone into this We've had since then a third increase in that, from 6 to 8.2%. So the circumstances did not look as serious then. But we also look at what the cost to employers is in surrounding states. And we provided an exhibit at the back of that packet that compares the total of Minnesota's unemployment insurance tax, the workforce development fee, and a surcharge for a low trust fund balance to states surrounding it that we, to some extent, compete with to keep our employers and to attract good-paying jobs. And the way to read this, and you can read it either with the 20-employee example or the 100-employee example, but a minimum tax employer in Minnesota would pay about $14,500 in taxes under our rate. And an employer also at the minimum rate, you can see what they pay in different states. It ranges from 85% of our premium in North Dakota to 0% for a small employer in South Dakota to about 14% in Indiana. And we had the concerns, Mr. Chairman, about having these relationships get to be more disadvantageous to Minnesota. And so those are the two reasons combined that we elected not to increase the rate.
Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Rukavina, I'm glad to see that you are very concerned about how the workforce development funds are used. And hopefully it's not too late that you look at the bill that we have, that you passed out of this committee, and how the workforce development funds are being used in the current bill that we have before us, because I have concerns that we are using those funds for things other than providing training for folks to get out there and get into the job market. And I would hope that you would take that under consideration when you have your discussions with Commissioner McElroy and with the governor's office. And, you know, when we're talking about creative solutions, you know, I came out of the tax committee just like you here from this morning from a very long discussion about that bill. And what was disheartening to me was there wasn't anything creative about it. It was the same old, let's just tax more to see if that gets us out of the hole. And, in fact, it doesn't even address the tails. We are leaving a $1.2 billion unfunded when it comes to all of our bills. And I'm glad to see that you're concerned about that sort of issue, and hopefully you'll join us when it comes to debating that issue on the floor, because, you know, we're not doing responsible management of our dollars when we leave $1.2 billion of obligations unfunded through our tax bill.
Representative Nornes, you had a question?
Just a brief comment. Representative Rukavina, you're talking about how we can create jobs, and I was tempted to mention this when we were doing the bill, but I thought it might be taken as trivial. But if you look at this chart that we have, that we were just looking at, the best way we could create jobs would be to adopt North Dakota's plan, their entire plan. And we wouldn't need the 18-member committee that we've just created. They have a plan that's permanent and seems to be working, and also they have a tax rate that's pretty decent, too. So, and a comment.
Mr. Chair, just to that point, there's a reason why three-quarters of the population of North Dakota lives on the Minnesota border.
Or in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Representative Mahoney, you had a comment.
Yeah, because this has, we have to move on to our other bills, but I did want to Representative Nornes, I spend way too much time reading surveys, I can tell you I do, as I try to figure out, as I harass this commissioner about a plan. And statewide, all the surveys, taxes are not the top issue, not even the second issue. They come in third and fourth. Nationally, in the lower five out of the top ten. Taxes are not the issue. It's workforce, who shows up to work, how incentivized they are to actually do the job when they get there, what the productivity is when they show up and how they get there. Transportation. There's a whole variety of other things that come into why a company moves to a state, and taxes generally are not. Even in, they're third at the best in this state, and nationally they're in the lower five. But I will leave it at that, and if you want to see those, I can dig them up for you, sir.
Mr. Chair, I can only say we lost 75 jobs to South Dakota, and it wasn't because of the climate. And part of that company is also now doing business in China. They're no longer in Fergus Falls, Minnesota.
That's a whole other area.
You have a comment?
No.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, we talked way back at the beginning of the session about workers in the workforce centers and people who are helping people find jobs, and I think you said earlier today that you do have more people in the workforce centers working. Have we hired new people? And the reason for my question, I think Ms. Elsie said when she was here a couple of days ago that all the money had been distributed out to the workforce centers to put more people, you know, put that money to use. I think the governor's plan had asked for $6 million more to put more workforce people in those. That's about what was distributed out for that purpose, as I understand. So I'm trying to figure if that's already been done, and why it is that we didn't pull back those business liaison folks, that those 35 members, those people who are out talking to businesses.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Overmuller, we got money from the federal government in several programs. One appropriation or allocation is in a federal law called the Wagner-Pfizer Act, or Job Seeker Services. That is the money we're using to employ 60 additional people in workforce centers. They were new hires. We hired them through MinnesotaWorks.net. They're state employees. In addition to that, we got money through the Workforce Investment Act for adult services, youth services, and dislocated workers. Those were appropriated, or apportioned rather, to the workforce service areas, roughly, and it varied a little in programs, but most of them were 85% to the workforce service areas, up to 5% for administration, and 10% for statewide programs. I think those were the issues that the Ms. Elsie mentioned. We had originally asked for $6 million from the Workforce Development Fund to do what we're doing with Wagner-Pfizer Act dollars for the next 18 months. The governor's revised budget asked for $1.5 million in the second fiscal year of the biennium to continue that additional workforce in the workforce centers for the second half of fiscal year 11.
Okay. I don't see any more questions, so thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
We have several minutes to approve here, April 14th meeting.
I'll move on the minutes.
Okay.
April 14th and April 15th.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes for April 14th and 15th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like to move the House Bill 737 and 860 and members. What we're doing here is anticipating if there's any vetoes that I've got another vehicle to work with the governor to do a bill. So I'm moving these to finance.
Okay.
So I'm moving them to finance?
To finance. Yes.
So that's what I'm doing here, and I'd appreciate everybody's support. So you can.
Did you have an amendment for either of those?
I can do them later on.
Okay.
Finance.
Okay, all right.
I'm not intending to use either one of these bills. There's an argument with the for the counselors for the blind between two different blind groups. I just use it as a delete all to carry our bill.
Listen, I'm being told that we do need to amend 860.
Yeah, 860?
Yeah.
Okay, 860. I'll move the 737, and I'll move that first. Members, appreciate your support.
Okay.
Which amendment are we working on?
This is
on?
The
File 737.
The DE2 amendment. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Moving 737. Okay. All right. All those in favor of House File 737, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay. And then you have the amendment for 863. For this is the HO 860 DE2 amendment. Does everyone have a copy of that? Representative Gunther. Okay. Representative Gunther moves the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, then I'll move the bill as amended.
Okay.
House File 860. Do you recommend the pass for the finance?
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Representative Mahoney.
I would like to move House File 1081 and I will put an amendment on it and move it to finance. I'll be a little bit more coy about it. I think this might have a value a little later on. And I would like to move the A2 amendment, which changes it just enough to get it to finance.
Okay. All right. All those in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the,
okay,
the House File 1081 as amended to finance.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Okay, we are having the higher ed spreadsheet being handed out. Apparently the handout you had in your packet was not accurate. This is the revised spreadsheet. Okay.
It was accurate.
Yeah, oh, I see, I understand. Okay, so it was accurate, it was just missing the second page. Well, you know, that would be inaccurate if it didn't have all the information.
Make it inaccurate, yep.
Okay.
We're done.
Sure,
I don't have any more business.
Okay.
Do you?
No, I do not. Okay, so we stand adjourned.
Sure, I do want to thank everybody again and the committee and our pages and everybody for the hard work. And I'm going to talk to Commissioner McElroy, too.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
If I remember the new rules, joint rules, the governor or the governor's representative has to come to conference committee and actually present their arguments for compromise. So it might be interesting to an open committee rather than in your office, Mr. Rukavina.
We'll be talking big picture. That's not required.
Would that be like the range big picture?
Yeah.
All right. We are adjourned.
Thank you.